Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed podcast brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 397. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. I have a great guest in the Toolshed with me this week. He is a prospect writer over at the Dynasty Dugout and host of the Prospect Promotion Incentive Podcast. Excuse me. Big Brewers fan, so we'll get a lot of Brewers talk in this episode as well. Zach Beck at Upper_Beck on Twitter. Beck, how you doing, bud?
I am doing great. It's really nice to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you too, man. It's been great. You know, we've been hanging out the last couple of years out in Arizona. Got a little Airbnb action going last year, you know, with you and Scully, me and Clegg. Went to a ton of games last year. Always a good time.
It's a great setup out there to have the four of us in one house and all going to ball games.
Oh, it was great because we were close to the, you know, the hotel where first pitch conference was at, and then kind of right in the middle of everything, all the ballparks, you know, within 40 minutes or so from us. A couple that are close by, obviously. There's the three on the east side, three on the west side. So we got to a ton of games last year, saw a ton of players. Always fun going out there, and we're about, what, four and a half months from doing it again. So it'll be here before we know it, but until then, we got a lot of fun baseball to talk about today. Talk some, you know, trending young MLB guys, but more of a prospect heavy show. Got a couple of prospect promotions, a couple of live looks that I saw from last week in Toronto. Well, not in Toronto, Toronto system, I should say. I didn't go to Canada for live looks. I've never been to Canada, fun fact. But then we'll do a lot of Brewers talk to round out the show, as Beck is a Brewers fan. And it's a very fun farm system. So a lot of interesting names to talk about. Before we get into all of that, though, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content on RotoBaller or over on my Patreon, which is toolshedfantasy.com, also linked in my Twitter bio. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on RotoBaller with RotoBaller's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win with RotoBaller's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pack comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED to get 10% off at checkout. All right, before we get into it, though, Beck, give you a quick little runway here. Talk about your new show, the Prospect Promotion Incentive Podcast, which you guys are 6 or 7 episodes into now, I believe. So why don't you guys plug the show and let the good people know what you guys talk about over there.
Yeah, appreciate it. I mean, you did a pretty good job of plugging my stuff up front, so I appreciate that. But as you mentioned, spend a lot of time with you, Chris, and Scully. Scully is my best friend from college. He's traveled with me to the Arizona Fall League for the last 4 years. Real big brain ball knower. And I finally talked him into starting a podcast. And I think it's a pretty cool concept. We just cover all of the promotions across every level from the complexes to Major League Baseball every week. So it's a little bit of a roundup on notable players who are moving levels. Our episodes lately have been running like 75 minutes. There's some fun banter up front. We do a segment called Did You See This? And it was just the coolest stuff we saw in the sport over the last week. And we do sort of off the wall prospect comps. So I don't know if you're familiar with those calendars that have a holiday for every day of the year. But every day that we record, we sit down and whatever the national, you know, insert here holiday is, we do a prospect comp for that. So last week, or the last episode we did, Scully went with National Mascot Day and chose George Walkow just because he loves the Cannonballers mascot. And I went with root beer and had a whole kind of aside about dirty soda and Mormonism and Max Muncy of the A's. So we're having a ton of fun. We're 7 episodes in. I think we're getting better. It is called the Prospect Promotion Incentive. You can find it on Spotify or Apple Music by searching either Prospect Promotion Incentive or PPI.
Definitely go give that a follow and check out the show. Great work. You know, obviously getting to know Beck and Scully the last couple of years has been great. Great setup out there. So definitely check that out and all of Beck's work over on Dynasty Dugout. And I'm pretty sure Beck does the most thorough top 100 write up you can find out there. And I think you have it still pinned on your Twitter profile right now. But how many pages was your top 100 this year?
It ended up being 187 pages long. So typically I sit down and start writing when we're in the AFL and then I publish in March. I would like to get it out a little bit sooner, but you know, we're looking at like 80,000 words or a full length novel.
Yeah.
and you know, it got great reception. I put it out every year for free because it's just a passion project of mine. I would love to be sitting here 20 years from now and have, you know, essentially 20 books that I've written that I can look back on. Sort of like an encyclopedic knowledge of where baseball was at the minor league level at that time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I can attest to that. There was times when I was sitting at the dining room table and you were over on the couch and I was writing something, you were writing something. So it was 10:30 at night. Yep, I can definitely attest to that. He was working on it back in October at that point in time. So
yeah,
great stuff there. And I just pulled up the national holidays for today just because I was curious. The two most prominent ones here, there's a National Kissing Day. That's an interesting one. And it's also National Onion Ring Day. So that's a pretty pretty fun one.
Apparently I'm trying to think about who I would pick for those. I think my gut instinct on kissing would just be whatever prospect I think is the most handsome, which might require further research. and onion rings, I don't know why my brain immediately went to Moises Ballesteros, but I would have to back into the reasoning on it.
I can see it. I like that. I mean, onion rings are good, man. I love me a good onion ring.
Big fan.
As am I. All right. Let's get over to some baseball talk here. That's obviously what we're here for. Starting off with some intriguing young names in the major leagues that are, you know, shooting up rankings and joining the elite as we speak. Junior Caminero and Nick Kurtz. Sort of Caminero here. I feel like every day or every other day, Caminero is going yard. He's got 19 home runs and a 265, 310, 523 slash line so far this season. He's still only 21 years old. And you know, someone asked me the other day after I posted the video of his 19th home run, you know, how many 21-year-olds have ever had a 40 home run season in the major leagues? And I had to look it up on Fangraphs, and there was only 3. It was Acuna in 2019. Eddie Mathieu in 1953 and Mel Ott in 1929. So Caminero has a shot to be the 4th, obviously one of the most powerful young bats in baseball. I mean, at this point, you know, obviously Joe Ram is the, you know, been the crown jewel at this spot for the last half decade or even longer, but he's also 32, I want to say now, and Caminero's only 21. So you got a question, is Caminero the new number one for Dynasty? What do you think about that?
I like to think about Dynasty in 3-year windows, so I'm probably still leaning J-Ram, but I think it's a toss-up between, especially for points formats, which I predominantly play, a toss-up between Caminero and Austin Riley at this point for number 2 there. I would have Caminero as a top 30 overall player in Dynasty points formats. I mean, he is the 5th youngest player in Major League Baseball. As you said, I also, you know, was interested in the 21-year-old 40 home run pace stat. He would be the 4th. It makes you wonder how we would be talking about him if Ronald Acuna didn't exist. and he's not really striking out while doing it either. He's striking out at an 18% clip, you know, at this point in the year, which is excellent. And I know he's running a little bit of a lower OBP. He's not going to be helpful in Cats or Roto in that particular category, at least early in his career, but it matters less in points as it's not a standalone category. So I love Junior Caminero. He's a former number one overall prospect for me, and we're seeing him put it together really, really young and early in his major league career.
Yeah, he might have a stranglehold on that top spot for a bit because, you know, yeah, Riley, so right now I have Caminero 24th and Riley 27th. Devers is likely going to lose that eligibility this year unless something crazy happens out there in San Francisco. You know, Jazz, you never know if he's a keep eligibility or not, but he's a little bit below. Then you get the older guys, you know, Machados and Bregmans, who are kind of a rung down for me. And then Joe Ram eventually, you know, law of averages and in nature and whatever, he'll not be a stud anymore probably in a few years. So I don't know who else could come up and take that spot. The prospect role at third base isn't great. You know, I'm sure one or two of these shortstops will move over. So it's kind of hard to say, but I don't see anyone else that's going to like rise up and, you know, threaten Caminero's, you know, kind of future top spot at this position. And I think it's, you know, everything's legit. I mean, you mentioned only striking out right around 18% of the time. Sure, he doesn't walk a whole lot, so the OBP probably never is, you know, overly beneficial, but quality of contact is, you know, near elite right now. He's already near, he might either be number one, he's top three at least in bat speed right now, nearly 78 mile an hour bat speed, you know, a little bit of a higher ground ball rate, but also has a high pull error rate too. So, and, you know, zone contact rate of 87%, overall contact 79.5%. So I think that, you know, average could even tick up a little bit. Yeah, there's not a lot of, you know, red flags per se with Caminero. He's doing this at 21. So damn good. And people are like, oh, well, he's in a, you know, hitter-friendly home park. The Trop is a hitter-friendly home park too. So it's not like he's going to be going back to a pitcher-friendly park next year or whenever the Trop is ready again. I don't even know when that's going to be. But, yeah, I'm, you know, 100% buying into Caminero. I think there's it's hard not to at this point. But moving across the diamond over to first base, Nick Kurtz, I mean, Cags is struggling a little bit, but Nick Kurtz, after struggling initially, has been tearing the cover off the ball, especially here in June. He's up to 10 home runs in 158 plate appearances so far with the Athletics. Has a 625 slug this month with five home runs in 50 plate appearances. You look at the overall, you know, metrics, you know, the, you know, quality of contact is elite. 15.5% barrel rate, 48% hard hit rate. Contact skills are still below average, but trending in the right direction here. Just not really, you know, walking as much as we saw him walk in the minor leagues. Carry rate a little too high, but again, everything seems to be trending in the right direction with Nick Kurtz and kind of part of that core Athletic lineup, which is actually a pretty darn good lineup now, and will be in that good hitter-friendly park for at least next, I think, two more seasons, I believe, before they go to Vegas. So at this point, looking at those the Dynasty first base rankings, which are, you know, it's Vladdy, and then it's a bunch of older guys. You got, you know, Alonso, it's 30, Harper's 32, Olson 31, Freddie's 35. You know, then it kind of falls off. But, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say that by the end of the year, you could have Kurtz. I already have him as a top five at this position behind Vladdy, Alonso, Harper, and Olson, but Beck, do you think it's crazy to say that Kurtz could be as high as like the number two guy at this position if he continues to mash this season?
I don't think that's crazy. No, I don't have him there now. I think right around five makes sense. The number I came up with in my head was probably a top 80 overall player. I think we need to be a little bit patient with guys making their debut. We saw that with Kurtz where he started a little slow and he's turned it around as of late. We're also seeing that with Jack Caglione. And I'm going to continue to be patient with Kurtz primarily because he's whiffing a lot and striking out a lot. He's had some problems with lefties, both in the minors and at the major league level. In AAA, his OPS against lefties was 723. In MLB so far, it's 492, which is a little concerning. It's small sample, but he sort of always had that same side deficiency.
Yeah.
And then you touched on this a little bit, but almost all of his performances come in Sutter Health Park. He's going to be there a little while, but the home road splits, you know, combined with lefties just makes him, you know, a tougher option in weekly formats. If he's going to be on the road a lot in any particular week or facing a lot of lefties. That said, all of it still counts and most of his plate appearances will come against righties and half of his games will be at home. So I'm maybe being a little bit more cautious than I need to be. I really, really like Nick Kurtz. Before he graduated, I would have had him as a top five prospect in the sport, but waiting for him to make a little bit more contact and strike out just a little bit less.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Where do you fall on the Kurtz versus Cags debate? Obviously, it's easy to say Kurtz right now because he's been, you know, hitting well lately, and Cags is still struggling. But long term, how close do you think these two are?
I have never really known what to do with Jack.
He's a tough one.
It's kind of like, you know, when he got promoted, in my head, I was like, yeah, he could strike out 40% of the time, but he could also hit 25 home runs for the rest of the season, and neither would surprise me. So there's just so much volatility there. I think some of this might depend on your league size. If I were just shooting upside, pure upside, I'd probably lean Kegs. If I were in a deeper league and I needed maybe a more stable option, I would go Kurtz, but I think they're pretty close right now.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I think upside, you have a slight edge to Kegs, floor, slight edge to Kurtz, but in the same rank, I don't think there's like a super low floor for Kegs either. And obviously Chase is a ton, and he is right now, but yeah, I think these guys are both top five options at this position moving forward. Just, we'll see how quickly they get there. I think Kurtz is already getting there in that discussion. You know, Josh Naylor, you know, similar tier right now. But yeah, this position's kind of, you know, Soderstrom's getting up there, Michael Bush, Aranda, a couple guys are getting up there. But yeah, it'll be fun to see how this position develops over the next couple of years, as, you know, then Harper will be in his mid-30s, Olson will be in his mid-30s, Freddie will probably still be hitting, whatever. But Freddie always hits. But, and then Vlad's kind of been like, you know, good but not great this year.
Right.
So he's kind of back to being like, oh, great metrics, but kind of okay surface stats type of guy. So
yeah,
this is a weird ass position. I'll tell you, it's hard to like kind of put rank this position right now with the mix of young and old. But
I think it's going to change a lot over the next couple of years. To your point, the position is trending older, and it's almost like there's a change of guard coming. And so yeah, I think it's pretty volatile right now, and I think people should be thinking about their windows, you know, to win. If that's in the next, you know, if that's this year and next year, I probably lean some of the older guys. If you're building for the future, then, you know, there's going to be, like I said, a changing of the guard.
You know, we seem to get that every like decade or so at this particular position. Like, you know, go back 10 years, it's like, all right, when Pools was starting to fall off, and Mickey and Votto and those types. And then some of these, like the Harpers, no, he was not a first baseman then, but some of these younger guys were emerging then. Now they're the older guys now. So, yeah, I think that changing in the guard, as you said, is coming soon for sure. Next guy I want to talk about, he doesn't really fit the rest of this episode, but I feel like I've, you know, should have talked about this guy on recent episodes and haven't. So wanted to sneak him in here, and that's Joe Boyle of the Tampa Bay Rays, who's been absolutely dominant in AAA lately. Pitched on Thursday, had his fourth straight outing of at least 8 strikeouts. And then over his last 11 starts for Durham, 56 innings, 1.77 ERA, 0.89 whip, only an 8.8% walk rate, which is huge, and a 32.9% strikeout rate, 1.59 batting average against. I mean, that walk rate was always really high with Boyle. Stuff's always been really good, but the walk rate was kind of why I was not super high on Boyle. Now that he's starting to show better, you know, command and control, I'm starting to buy in on Joe Boyle here. And you got to wonder if he gets a chance to contribute here in Tampa Bay sooner rather than later, especially with guys like Bradley not pitching so well right now. So what are your thoughts on Joe Boyle, Beck? And are you more confident in him now that he's kind of lowering that walk rate?
Yeah, he's enjoyed over his last 3 starts the best stretch of strike throwing of his career. Last year in Las Vegas, he was walking almost 8 batters per 9 over a 45-inning sample. In 64 innings with Durham this year, it's just 3.5. That is a material change in control. And he's going to pop on stuff models. If he is walking like 9-10% of batters, he's going to be a good starter. He may be a little bit volatile if he just doesn't have it, you know, some nights, but this is the sort of arm talent that could be a top of the rotation starter. And it feels like we've been waiting on it for a while. I am getting a little bit more confident just based on the film that I've seen and this recent stretch of being in the zone. I sort of wonder, the Rays have talked pretty publicly about their sort of strategy of telling these guys, just throw it right down the middle and let your stuff eat. If that is what is going on with Boyle and he's just getting confident throwing his stuff in the zone and missing, you know, just off the edge when he isn't locating. I'm very intrigued. The sort of the Rays ethos of just throw it right down the middle. And if you let your stuff win, is intriguing to me.
Oh yeah, definitely is. And the system's always been obviously pretty good at developing pitchers. And I got to add in there that he also had, you know, that good major league start back in mid-April against Atlanta. He didn't give up a hit. It was two unearned runs, two walks, and seven strikeouts across five innings. So only a spot start, and he went back down to AAA. But yeah, you look at, you know, really in the last four starts, only five walks in the last four starts combined. And really just only those two starts in like mid-May where he had four and three walks. So he had two starts of six innings total, seven walks. But outside of that, it's been pretty good over his last 11 starts in AAA. So yeah, stuff is really, really good with Joe Boyle. Yeah, so I'm definitely intrigued. Like now that he's got that walk rate down, strike throwing, as you mentioned, is better. I'm definitely back to being intrigued. The same thing I was with Mitch Yarowski, who we'll get to here in a bit. These guys, it's not like a golden rule, but if they're at like 10-ish%, I'm like, all right, if they have great stuff, that can still play. But when they get to like 12+%, 13, 14, 15%, that's when I get really concerned. I'm like, all right, they're either going to the bullpen or they're just not going to ever kind of figure it out to the point where, they maximize their upside. So, Boyle was in that range. I forget what the walk rate was, but it was super high, like 15, 17%, something like that. And now it's been basically cut in half this year. Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued for sure.
One thing I haven't really done the legwork to figure out is I have noticed sort of this trend of pitchers coming up from AAA where they do the automated ball strikes and seeing their walk rate tick down 2 or 3%. And I would love to understand if that is something to do with the ABS system or if that's just the effect of big league pitching staffs or coaching staffs.
Yep.
Or if I'm even right, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Boyle come up and throw even more strikes or limit walks rather.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point there. It's really interesting to kind of dig into that, on both sides of it. Like just another example, how Bubba Chandler's walk rate's kind of skyrocketed recently. So it's like, is that, though he's been at AAA the whole season, but is it more so because of the system or is he just a mental thing? It's a lot of interesting kind of talking points to dig into in terms of the ABS system. So yeah, that's definitely a good point there on Boyle, but I got to imagine he's up fairly soon here. Another blow up or two from Bradley or whoever. And I think you see Boyle get another chance here, but we got a couple of interesting prospect promotions here. The big one, Chase Burns, will make his major league debut on Tuesday against the New York Yankees. So in your first inning, you get to see Aaron Judge, either second or third in the lineup. That's going to be fun. But Burns is my number one pitching prospect and, I think is for a good amount of people now, definitely in that top tier for sure. In 13 starts this year between high A, double A, and triple A, 66 innings, 1.77 ERA, 0.77 whip, only a 5.5% walk rate, 36.8% strikeout rate, and a 166 batting average against. I mean, this guy has, the two, maybe even double plus pitches with the fastball slider, solid curve and changeup as well. And on top of all that, he can command them all pretty well and has, plus control. Like it's a plus command and control profile over that type of arsenal. You just don't see that blend very often. Yeah, he's got to pitch half his games in Great American Ballpark. I know that, but this is going to be a nasty 1-2 with Green and Burns down the road here. So I'm all in on Burns. I mean, I put him number one ahead of Chandler and Painter and all them for a reason. So I'm definitely full steam ahead, fully on board. Burns being an ace in this league, and I don't throw on that term lightly. But what are your thoughts on Burns, Beck?
I totally agree. I also have him as my number one pitching prospect. I know I'm supposed to be excited about this promotion, but I was going to see him in St. Paul on Tuesday. I will not be traveling to Cincinnati to see his major league debut. So I'll have to watch it on TV just like everybody else. He's one where I would put a double plus on both the fastball and the slider. This is almost like a Spencer Strider situation where he's so dominant with two pitches that as long as he has sort of a release valve of a changeup or a curveball that is serviceable or helps him get out lefties, that's enough. I don't really care too much about the ballpark. I think the arm talent is just that good.
Yeah.
He's leading minor league baseball in strikeout minus walk rate for pitchers over 50 innings this year. And honestly, I think a lot of the people that I talk to about baseball or who write about baseball and aren't in the fantasy space are really mulling over the question of whether or not Chase Burns should be the next pitcher ranked number one overall, not just among pitchers.
Yeah.
The talent is that good. This is, you know, sort of a situation where if Paul Skenes didn't exist, everybody would have been a lot more excited about Chase Burns coming into FYPDs. And I'm not suggesting that Chase Burns is going to pull an 80 grade off speed pitch out of his back pocket, but his top two pitches, the fastball and slider, are that good.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Look at his last outing, which was on, I think it was the 18th. I think he had 11 whiffs on that slider. And the fastball, I think, average was like 98 and a half, something like that. He could hit triple digits with it, you know, with regularity throughout the start. And again, he just commands everything so well. It's like he's a 10% walk rate guy. This is, you know, down near 5% walk rate, guys. So, yeah, I am fully buying into what we've seen from Burns this year. And, yeah, I can't wait for that debut. It's going to be a fun, like, midweek for pitching. We got Burns' debut on Tuesday. Then we got Wednesday, we got Skenes versus Mizorowski at, I think, 2:10 Eastern time on Wednesday. So that'll be a fun midweek game as well. The other promotion here, not quite as big as Chase Burns, but still a pretty fun one, and Didier Fuentes with the Atlanta Braves. Feels very similar to the rise of AJ Smith-Shawver 2 years ago, where it's, you know, a 20-year-old debuting, and he just turned 20 like last week, I think it was. Nine starts this year, started out in high A and a few in double A, only I think it was just one in triple A, or maybe two. Nine starts overall, 39 and third innings. It was a 4.81 ERA, but that's very misleading. 2.82 FIP, 3.39 XFIP, 1.12 WHIP, 7.2% walk rate, 28.9% strikeout rate, and a 2.15 batting average against. MLB debut the other day, went five innings, six hits, four earned, one walk, and three strikeouts. What are your thoughts on Fuentes? I mean, are you buying this pretty big rise that we've seen from him this year?
I like Didier Fuentes. I think the fastball is awesome. It has a lot of hop. It has a low release point. It's sort of a similar VAA profile to like Brian Wu, for example, if you're looking for fastball comps. My concerns are, you know, they promoted him 2 days after his 20th birthday. 2 months ago, he was pitching in high A. He just had a great start in Major League Baseball. And I kind of think the best time to sell a prospect that you're not sure on is right after they play well in their Major League debut,
100%.
Especially a pitcher. And I do have some concerns about Fuentes long-term. He's kind of slight. He's 6 foot, 170. And he's primarily two pitches, which is sort of a traditional reliever-ish profile. I really like what he's done thus far. I would have him inside my top 100. But if I could sell him for Major League talent right now, that would help me win. I think that's probably the way to go. Maybe he's gotten himself some runway now with Chris Sale, you know, hitting the shelf. But he's exciting. The fastball is really, really good. I'd be sort of putting feelers out there for anybody that might need young pitching and trying to get something more established in return.
Yeah, definitely like a team that's kind of fallen out of contention in your league that might want to trade away one of those, like, you know, early to mid 30s arms for a guy like Fuentes, or a package with Fuentes in it. Yeah, that's definitely a good move. Yeah, I'm kind of right similar thought to you. I like Fuentes, and he's definitely moved up for me. I didn't quite have him top 100, but I think I had him top 150. And then I just don't know if there's, yeah, you mentioned the two-pitch guy, but it's really the fastball leading the way. I don't love, you know, the secondaries with Fuentes. You have the two breakers, but I don't know. He's still very young, obviously, so they could keep developing those pitches more, maybe develops a changeup or cutter or something. But, yeah, I'm still got some questions there with Fuentes, and I always kind of wonder, like, you know, I don't think they screwed up Smith-Shawver, but I think they might have set him back a little bit a couple years ago with how heavy they pushed him. Easy to say now, but I kind of wonder if they pushed Fuentes a little bit too much as well, even though the arm talent definitely is fun. But, yeah, so I like and I don't love Fuentes. I think that's kind of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely would be kind of that same line of thinking with you. Yeah, especially if I'm a contending team, I could, you know, make a trade for a more established veteran that helps me more right now. And you know, maybe not helps me down the road, but yeah, I think that'd be definitely a move I'd be looking to make right now for sure. So yeah, good point there for sure. on Fuentes.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
All right, moving on to Toronto here. I saw Trey Yesavage and Jaron Watts-Brown on a doubleheader on a very humid night. So I was kind of feeling what you were feeling earlier today. Not, it wasn't that hot, but still, it was the warmest day of the year so far up here in the Northeast. But back-to-back games, neither one overall, like the lines kind of got away from them. Overall, especially in their final inning, but they both were very, very impressive overall. We'll start with Yesavage. He was cruising through two. I mean, I think he only had 23 pitches through two, and then it just all came unraveled in the third inning. Ended up 2 2/3, 3 hits, 4 runs, 3 walks, 4 Ks, 11 whiffs. Fastball set 93-94, topped out at 95, though he's thrown harder in earlier starts this year. A splitter, you know, 82 to 84, 85 or so was really good. Slider in the mid to upper 80s, and he threw a few curveballs around 82, 83. And then Jaron Watts-Brown, who was, I think, even more impressive in that particular day. Now, he did walk 4 4 2/3, 3 hits, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts, 18 whiffs. I think 17 of those came in the first 3 innings. Then he only got 1 the last inning and 2/3. But fastball is 92, 94. With him, he hit 96 a few times. I loved both breakers, slider in the mid-80s, curveball in the low-80s. Both were missing bats at a high. I think he had, I think, was it 7 whiffs on the slider and then 6 on the curve and then 3 on the fastball, I think was the breakdown of it. And then a few changeups around 85, 86 or so. Command was kind of spotty with him, which is what got him in trouble. But both very good arm talents right there. With Yesavage and Watts-Brown, I think they're both like top 5 or 10 in terms of swinging strike rate in the minor leagues right now for, you know, guys that have actually pitched a good amount of innings. Yesavage, I think, is a top 10 pitching prospect right now. I think most people have him there. But Watts-Brown, I think you commented on one of my first videos of him, that's how underrated he is. So I think he's a great dynasty target right now because the price tag is, I don't think, that high. And I was even guilty of it too. I think I underranked him myself. Not anymore. I've definitely moved him up a lot since seeing him. But so what are your thoughts here on Yesavage and Watts-Brown, Beck?
Maybe on the Blue Jays more broadly, I think the Blue Jays are pretty slept on. I mean, beyond these two, Yesavage and Watts-Brown, you also have Cal Stephen, and Gage Stanifer on the way to New Hampshire. You also have Johnny King, who is probably the best pitcher at the complex level this year. Yep. A lot of things going really well in Toronto, and, you know, pray for hitters who have to spend a week in New Hampshire, because there's a possibility that in the near future you could get a week that goes Yesavage, Watts-Brown, Cal Stephen, and Gage Stanifer, which is a tough week hit.
Yep.
I'm with you on Yesavage. He's a top 10 pitching prospect. Right now he's third in strikeout minus walk rate among arms with at least 50 innings pitched, which is just a filter I put on to take out some of the Dominican Summer League guys that have really wonky lines. ahead of him are Chase Burns and Wei-Yan Lin of the Athletics. His fastball is kind of freaky. It has a lot of hop just because his arm angle is so high. He gets a lot of effective backspin on it. That splitter is really nasty. I had the opportunity to see him in the spring breakout, and that pitch looked cartoonish. And the slider is effective. It's also kind of strange. It's kind of a gyro shape, but sometimes like moves arm side, which is very, very strange for that sort of pitch. Again, just predicated on his arm angle. And it looks like a supremely challenging or uncomfortable at bat in the box. If you're sitting right behind home plate, you're like, how do you pick this up at all?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
He struggles a little bit with control. I think that has to do with his mechanics. He's walked 11.5% of batters so far this year, but it hasn't really mattered because he's striking out like 40% of batters. Really, really impressive arm. Props to the Blue Jays for, you know, going after him, even though he had some questionable medicals after that collapsed lung. He looks great. What a return on investment so far. As far as Watts-Brown is concerned, he's kind of an interesting story. And I think it's a good parallel for how front offices don't care about what you did in college. They just care about pitch shapes and characteristics. Watts Brown was a starter with a 5 ERA his last year at Oklahoma State, and the Blue Jays still took him in the third round and signed him for over $1 million just because they liked his stuff. He gets crazy life on the fastball, even though it sits, you know, 93, 95, top 97. The slider also kind of gyro, you know, you said you saw a bunch of whiffs. I think it acts kind of like an off-speed pitch to righties. And then he is throwing his changeup more often this year to lefties, which I think has just unlocked another level for him. The curveball is really the true breaking ball that I've seen on video, at least. And it all looks really good. It's a kind of a true four pitch mix now that he's throwing his changeup. And I think he's really underrated right now.
Absolutely. I was super impressed. There's always like, I love these guys that, you know, obviously I was excited to see him when I found out he was going, but there's always a few guys every year where I don't expect to be as kind of wowed as I end up being. Like a couple of years ago, like Richard Fitz, like blew me away in Double-A. Like I went to see Tiedemann. Tiedemann was facing Fitz. Tiedemann only lasted two innings. Fitz had like 11 Ks and six shutout or whatever it was that day. So I love when you just see guys that you just weren't expecting to be that impressed by. And yeah, Watts Brown was certainly impressed. I mean, this walk issues with both these guys, I think, but you Savage, to your point, yeah, it's a very, that's a good way to describe it. It's a very athletic delivery. I mean, it's kind of like limbs coming at you. It's kind of hard to describe his delivery.
Yeah.
It's not one that you'll see it. You're like, oh, that's interesting. It's not, I'm not saying it's in a bad way necessarily, because he repeats it fairly well from what I was seeing, but yeah, it's definitely an interesting delivery from you Savage. But yeah, him and Watts Brown, Savage is the big name, as we mentioned, but I think Watts Brown, maybe he's not top 10 pitching prospect level, but this is a name that's, you know, a pretty good pitching prospect that's, you know, slept on a little bit and just not ranked as highly as he probably should be. So yeah, definitely a great kind of value target in dynasty leagues right now, for sure.
There are guys like this that you can jump on basically every year. And the key is just to get in on them early. And I think right now is the opportunity to get in on Watts Brown.
Yeah, and same with Kyle Steffen, you know, same with, you know, Johnny King is a guy that I liked a lot when I was writing up the Toronto system this offseason. As you mentioned, he's one of the better arms down in the complex level. And this Toronto system, they're cooking something on the pitching side for sure. See if they can figure out some hitters. Not a lot of good hitting prospects in the system, but pitching, they're definitely cooking something for sure.
Yes.
Or we could say they're brewing something, and that would have been a better segue into our final kind of discussion point here of some Milwaukee Brewers prospects. This is one of the more fun systems in baseball, especially on the hitting side, especially with Milwaukee. But we'll start with a pitcher, of course, because that's the way it goes. Jacob Mizierowski. I mean, oh Lord, the way he started his major league career. I mean, I already kind of talked about him a lot last week, so I won't kind of, you know, give deep thoughts here again this week, but I had to talk Mizierowski with Beck being a Milwaukee guy. First two starts for Mizierowski. I mean, I love this stat. He's the first pitcher in Major League history in his first two starts to have more wins, two, than hits allowed, one. That's just like an insane stat line. It's like a random thing, but it's just like two wins, one hit allowed. And that hit allowed wasn't even until the seventh, and he had a no-hitter going into the seventh of his last start before it kind of came a little bit unraveled in the seventh, but only two earned and one hit allowed, five walks, 11 strikeouts in his first 11 innings. I mean, this is a guy that has some of the highest upside in all of baseball. He's already taken over the fastball velocity leaderboard at the top spot from Hunter Green among actual starters. Not, you know, there's some relievers higher than him, but a 99.7 mile an hour average fastball velocity through his first two starts. And he has a slider averaging 94.6. A changeup 92.8 and a curveball 87.6. So, what are your thoughts on Mizierowski, and, you know, just how good do you think this guy can be long term?
They should extend him tomorrow. I was in attendance on Friday night, and just listening to Twins fans around me sort of be bewildered by what they were seeing on the scoreboard with velocities was really, really fun. In his first start, Baseball Savant was fighting for its life trying to classify these pitches because it's such an abnormal sort of velocity band. He's a total unicorn, and he is a joy to watch. I think like his strike throwing has taken a step forward this year. The Brewers made a pretty intentional push for him to throw this slider variation that he's able to zone more often. And I think that has really paid dividends in terms of him limiting walks. He has pretty stark splits, you know, based on how many walks he has in any given game. His ERA is like over six when he walks three or more batters and under one when he walks two or fewer. So really dialing in that control, I think, is going to be important. The big conversation that I've been having about Mizorowski and arms like him that have had sort of egregious walk rates, we spent a little bit of time talking about Joe Boyle, is you need to, I think, balance as a dynasty player, you need to balance the likelihood that they become an ace and the likelihood that they are a bullpen arm. I think we really like to put players into buckets and treat that sort of as a binary. You are a starter for sure, or you are a reliever for sure. And I think I'm guilty of this. I had Miz, I think 70 or 71 in the book, just because I was pretty certain he was going to break through as a reliever and spend a good amount of time there. And I didn't know if the command control was going to come around, and I'm really buying what's going on now. I'm trying not to be a sensationalist just based on, you know, the 11 and change innings that he's thrown thus far, but he looks awesome. I think the new slider is paying dividends in terms of helping him throw strikes. And, you know, I just want him to be healthy and a Brewer for a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like to do comps, but he gives me some like young Tyler Glasnow vibes, which I think is easy to say. It's given, you know, both tall, lankier righties, just ridiculously stupid stuff. And yeah, like I was the same. Like I Mizorowski's probably been one of the, you know, the top 100 type guys that have bounced around up and down the most for me, just because like, all right, like this late last year, early part of this year. Yeah. I kind of had him drop down a little bit too. I think it was probably similar range, like 75, 80 after having him like top 50 earlier last year, just because like, I don't know if this guy's going to be a starter, or if he is he going to be this guy that's a super maddening to roster with like higher whip. And then he started turning it around, and he had that stretch where he was like, you know, not walking anybody for a few starts. I'm like, all right, this is really intriguing, because that's, again, that's all I asked for. I'm like, just keep it at 10%, dude. That's all I care about. I said, like, I call it, and I've always called this the Freddy Peralta rule. This Freddy, just because it's not because you're here. That's literally what I've been calling it. But Peralta's always been like 9-10% walk rate guy, but the stuff's always been so good that he made it work. So I've always kind of thought that, all right, keep it at a 9-10% and you let the elite stuff play. But he was getting at 14-15% walk rate. I'm like, all right, I don't know if this is going to work as a starter. But at the same time, I didn't drop him too low, because I was like, this guy could be like the best relief closer in baseball if that's the route that he has to go. So that's why I was like, all right, I'm not going to drop him too low, because he can still provide value that way. But yeah, this, I think people, like, I got so many comments like, oh, he's going to blow his arm in a year. Let's hope not. Just, you know, throwing 95 mile an hour sliders is just, I can't even, like, my brain doesn't comprehend a 95 mile an hour slider.
Yeah.
It was already crazy enough when like DeGrom was throwing 92 mile an hour sliders, and now it's like 95 slider. I'm like, this is insane.
I never want to hear somebody ask again if hitting is harder today than it was 15 years ago. I think, like, just pull up some Jacob Mizorowski film, and the answer is yes, that is harder to hit. I also, this is a total aside, but I can't stand people online who just forecast injuries. We know, you know, a majority of pitchers are going to have a major elbow surgery at some point. I don't know how to fix that, but it doesn't make you look smart if you just run around and predict injuries all the time. There's no victory lap to be had there. Nobody likes that. But, you know, I will say Mizorowski and Boyle, and to a certain extent, like Sebastian Walcott, have me really evaluating the way that I go about ranking players, because at some point you have to look at what the ceiling is and look past some flaws. I think that I've been maybe a little bit too pragmatic about, you know, I need a minimum contact rate, I need a minimum strike rate, those sorts of things. And it can lead me to be a little bit slower or just lower on these players overall. And when they work out, it's a big, big miss. So I'm trying to ingrain that in myself, that, like, you know, you need to pay attention to what this could be on the positive side as much as you are on the negative side.
Oh yeah. It's definitely a tough balance for sure. And another example of that, you know, a huge example, I think Ellie De La Cruz, how many people were probably like low or out on him because, oh, he strikes out too much, contact rates aren't great, but then look, like he's got, you know, maybe the highest power speed upside in the game. Like this guy could go 50-90 a year and I won't be surprised by it. Like, yeah, so that's definitely, that's a good point where it's a hard balance sometimes trying to figure out. Like I think a good example right now in the minor league, Spencer Jones. I mean, this guy has massive power. I've seen his massive power. I've seen him live eight, nine times probably. He's been double A for the last like year and a half. So I've seen a lot of Spencer Jones, and I've seen him hit some absolute shots, both in games and in BP. And he's a good athlete too. It's like the power speed upside there is notable, but what's the contact rate? Like 57% right now?
Yeah.
Or something like that. I haven't looked in a bit, but I know it's below 60, but yeah, he's tough. One where I can't figure out what the frick to do with Spencer Jones.
I actually think his athleticism goes a little bit underrated. I think he's like an 80 size adjusted athlete. There's some athletic testing data out there on Spencer Jones that is just freakish alien stuff.
He plays center field too.
Yeah, it's batty. He is impossibly fast for his size. My thing on Spencer Jones is like, if he had like a 68% contact rate, I'd be super in. If he was just striking out like 28% of the time,
he'd be top 20 overall.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you're trying to forecast the next 5-7 years of a player's career, and so much can change in that amount of time. So I would never rule out that something clicks for him and he starts making, you know, mid 60s contact and you know, striking out just upper 20s would be great.
Yep. Oh, I would take like 31, 32 at this point from Jones. He's been like 36, 37, 38%. But yeah, that bad at Yankee Stadium. Ooh, Lord. Like the baseball fantasy guy in me is like, that's exciting. The Red Sox fan in me, no, I don't, I want him to suck. But
yeah,
I don't want to deal with that. Imagine if he clicks him and Judge, jeez, that's no, I don't want to think about that as a
that'd
Red
be
Sox
dangerous.
Fan.
That'd be dangerous for fans.
Oh yeah, watch out. Make sure you bring protection, bring catcher's gear or something to the game.
Right.
You might get hit by a 120 mile an hour liner. All right, who's next on the list here? We got a little sidetracked here with it, but good discussion there. Oh yeah, of course, the two big names in the system outside of Mizorowski on the hitting side, Luis Peña and Jesus Mate, both down in low A right now. Peña in 200 plate appearances, 307, 365, 497 slash line, 6 home runs, 32 steals, 8% walk rate, 13.5% strikeout rate. Mate in 262 plate appearances, slash line of 282, 393, 432, 4 home runs, 31 steals, 14.9% walk rate, and an 18.7% strikeout rate. I think both guys are pretty much considered top 10 or at least top 15 pretty universally at this point. And there's a pretty fun debate on like what side are you on? Are you bigger on Peña? Are you bigger on Mate? And I think it's pretty split right now from what I've just been seeing on Twitter and whatnot. So figured I'd ask you, Beck, being the Milwaukee guy, okay, what are your thoughts about these guys? And are you team Peña or are you team Mate right now?
It's hard to think straight about these two. They have me kicking my feet and twirling my hair like I've got a crush.
As they should. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I really like them both. I think there's a couple things about Luis Peña that, you know, I've heard in the public sphere that I don't necessarily agree with. I think people see him as maybe a bigger stolen base threat than Jesus Mate. You know, what I've heard from scouts and other people who have seen him live is that Luis Peña is really turning in average run times and is more of an instinctual base dealer, which isn't, you know, materially different, but I think it does put sort of a ceiling on the stolen base outcome at the major league level. You need sort of plus or better sprint speed to be an elite base dealer at the major league level, just based on the pop times. And then the other is maybe an argument in favor of Luis Peña, which is I think folks see Jesus Mate as a guy with a little bit more underlying pop. Those numbers have come a lot closer together this year than they were in the DSL last year. Jesus Mate was turning in elite exits last year. They're a lot closer to each other this year. And so it makes it really hard to choose. I think Peña has a better hit tool. I think Mate is a little bit more explosive, both as a runner and with the underlying pop, but they're not far off one another. They're both top 10 prospects who are really splitting hairs, but I would choose Mate over Peña right now.
Yeah, I do have paid Mate a few spots higher than Peña But yeah, it's hard to go either way because they're both such phenomenal prospects. And you put them both on the same team. That the low levels of Milwaukee are really fun right now. And we'll talk a few more of these guys as well. But having both those guys in the same team right now is really, really fun playing on that left side of the infield. I don't know where these guys wind up. I mean, I think you got to measure one of these two stays at short. I can't really make a determination as to which one. So we'll see kind of where they end up long term, whether one has to move to second base, third base, maybe even the outfield. We'll see. But yeah, the upside, even though in the power, I think for both, I think the power has slept on a little bit more so with Pena, to your point, where I think people think there's a bigger power gap between Mate and Pena. And there was last year, but you know, kind of Mate's, I wouldn't say taking a step back. Maybe it's, like you said, not as gaudy as you would expect him to be after seeing what he did in the DSL last year. But then Pena's taking the step forward in that department as well. So yeah, I do lean Mate. Pena does have a better contact rate by like 3%, I believe it was. So kind of splitting hairs, as you said, yeah. Too. But yeah, they're both. I mean, I have, let's see, where do I have them right now? I have, yeah, Mate 6 and Pena 9. So yeah, they're both top 10 for me. And they could be both top 5. I mean, you know, Roman Anthony will graduate, you know, next, what, 3 weeks or so. And then you got just like that cluster of the next wave. You got the Griffins, you know, Walcott, DeVries, Mate, you got all the Dodger guys, you know, Hope and DePaula, McGonagall, Clark, Bisayo obviously is up in there too. So really fun next wave here. We'll see how it plays out. But I think any one of these guys, as said, could be number one, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just to put it out there, I think the more likely candidate to stick at short is Mate right now. And I'm sort of forecasting Pena as a second baseman, which in a weird way sort of gives him maybe a little bit more fantasy appeal just because Second base is so hard to get production from.
Especially now, like second base is definitely on the downswing right now. It's been a rough year for that position, but yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be a fun middle infield. That's the way it ends up with Pena and Mate up the middle for Milwaukee. That'd be really, really fun for sure.
Yes, it would.
All right. Next one up here. We go over to the hot corner, Brock Wilkin, kind of turning things around. I said a rough year last year on a lot of fronts. Obviously, took the fastball to the face early in the year. He came back super quick from that. It was like 2.5 weeks or something like that. But rest of the year just wasn't the same that we saw kind of the rise at the end of his Wake Forest tenure into the, you know, early part of his minor league tenure. But then that just kind of got put on hold last year. But turning it around this year, I mean, he's already hitting .230, but .392 OBP, .550 slug, 18 home runs, 17 doubles, 20% walk rate, only a 26% strikeout rate. And the contact rate's fine as well, 72%, and only a 9.5% swing and strike rate too. So I think the average is a little lower than it probably could be, given you know where he's at for contact and just the quality of contact that he has right now. You're seeing him kind of get back to being that Brock Wilkin that a lot of us, myself included, were kind of buying into the previous year when he was drafted out of Wake Forest. So are you buying back into Brock Wilkin right now, Beck?
Yeah, I'm trying not to get over my skis. I think maybe the more prescient way to put it is I'm giving him a mulligan for 2024. He came back so fast from taking a fastball to the face. And he talked pretty publicly about how it was difficult to get in the box and see sort of similar pitches on the inner third of the plate and have a competitive at bat after that. Baseball is such a mental game that I can imagine that's super challenging. And now we're, you know, about a year removed from that injury. It's really encouraging to see. I think my primary concern has been his bat to ball, that 73% contact rate, I think undersells it a little bit because the swinging strike rate is just, you know, 9.3% right now. The other thing that I sort of heard around the Arizona Fall League, because he was out there, was he towards the end of the year was just tired and, you know, was kind of telling people my head is pretty much anywhere but baseball right now. He just had another kid, with his wife. So a lot of family stuff going on, a lot of injury stuff. I would say I'm back in on Wilkin, but I'm trying not to get over my skis. It's more accurately just a mulligan for last year. I would like to pretend that last year didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of was saying that last year too, when he was struggling, right? Yeah. I dropped him down my rankings, kind of had to, but yeah. I wasn't like killing him in my rankings either. I mean, I think I just kept keeping him higher than most because like, all right, I was believing in the gains we saw the previous year where he was getting, you know, making more contact, less strikeouts, more walks, while still maintaining that high level of power. So and I was buying into that. I'm like, all right, maybe this guy can be like a 250 hitter with a higher OBP and 30 plus bombs in that third base spot. I still think he can be that guy. So yeah, I'm definitely, I don't have him top 100 right now, but I think he's pretty close to it for me, probably like that 115 to 120 range.
Sure.
And I think he could be top 100 again, you know, by the end of the season. I think there's definitely that talent in there. So maybe you'll have him right next to Mate and Pena in that infield here, although he'll be up, you know, a year or two sooner than those guys.
Yeah. I think you're right on. I think a top 100 placement by end of season is definitely within reach. The really interesting thing here, and I haven't looked at his numbers in, I don't know, a month. His swing rate at 34.5% is really, really low. And that's the big change that I'm seeing year over year. Yep. I'm sort of thinking of that as like a Band-Aid. Lowering your swing rate and being a little bit more selective at what you're swinging at, it can result in more strikeouts. In his case, he's walking 20% of the time. So really benefiting from just not being out of the zone at all and being extremely judicious. That doesn't necessarily always hold up against AAA and MLB arms. So it'll be sort of his transition back to, you know, against more aggressive pitching will be interesting to follow.
Yeah. And to your point, so yeah, 34.5% swing rate last year was about 40.5%. And 2023, though, that was a smaller sample. That was also about 40.5%. So yeah, he's down about 6% in terms of swing rate this year. But yeah, I'm definitely buying back into Wilk. I've always been a Wilkin guy. So it's good. It's good to see him kind of right the ship so far this year and get back in that top 100 discussion. And this next guy, I think, is starting to get into that top 100 discussion as well. Marco, is it Dingus or Dingus? Do you remember? I think it's Dingus.
It is Dingus. Yeah, it's Dingus. Like a hard G in there.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was thinking. Marco Dingus has been one of the better breakout prospects, especially at the catcher spot this year, between low A and high A. 220 plate appearances, 337, 436, 569 slash line, 11 doubles, 9 bombs, 5 steals, 13.6% walk rate, 15.9% strikeout rate. I think this guy, I mean, he's definitely rising up prospect. He's in a hurry. I don't think he was in a lot of like top 400, top 500s early in the year or to start the year. If he was, it was like the back end of it. And now I've seen more than one person talk about this guy being either top 100 right now or getting damn close to it. So are you buying the Marco Dingus kind of breakout here?
Yes. Yeah, I am. When he was drafted out of Florida State, he was really just a bat. He was sort of positionless. He was nominally a catcher and the Brewers said, you know, we see enough in the bat to fit you in somewhere. The big development is that he seems potentially serviceable as a catcher. So a true position now is great. He's always been an excellent hitter. We're seeing him get the power in games. The bat to ball is fine. Again, he's maybe a little bit old for single A, so I'm paying a little bit more attention to what's going on at high A, and the results there have been excellent as well. His WRC plus went from 175, I'm sorry, from 200 to 150. So, you know, pretty good results. The other thing that's really interesting is Brenton Del Chiaro. He is the assistant director of player development for the Brewers, was on Arm Layton's pod, the call up, doing sort of a breakdown of the Brewers system and reported that Dingus kind of cruising speed for bat speed is right around 77, 78 miles an hour, which is an elite mark. That would be a top five number in Major League Baseball. I have some skepticism about whether or not that's, you know, accurate just because swing speed, bat speed at the major league level is measured by Hawkeye, and this is off of a blast sensor. So, you know, some differences in accuracy there. And there was sort of before bat speed became public information, the Brewers did report, you know, an average bat speed for Jackson Chourio of like 81 miles an hour. So, you know, I have some suspicion there, but he's still a bat speed demon and he has a position now. And those are two huge developments for him as a guy that was pretty strictly just a bat in college.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have him top 100 yourself?
Not quite yet. I want to see him do it for a little bit longer at high A, but it's getting really challenging to argue with the numbers.
It certainly is. I mean, you know, him and like Eduard, so there's like three big catcher kind of breakouts right now in the lower levels. Eduardo Tait, who I have top 100 now. Raniel Rodriguez with the Cardinals, and then Marco Dingus with the Brewers here. Three. This catcher spot is actually pretty loaded. Like Alfredo Duno, another fun young catcher. Obviously, you get the bigger names at the top. You get the Ballesteroses, the Passaios, the Briseños. You know, obviously Kyle Teal, Harry Ford, those guys. But yeah, these kind of three are really rising and breaking. I don't have him top 100 yet either. Only one of the three I have top 100 is Tait, who's at 80 overall. But I think Dingus could get in that top 100 range for sure if he continues, because that blend of, you know, solid contact, some pop, can run a little bit too, maybe add a little bit there. Though I don't think he'd be more like a five steal guy, but just something in that department as well. Yeah, so this is definitely a really fun young, another fun young prospect in this Milwaukee system, which is probably one of the better ones in baseball, I think, at this point.
Yeah, but totally biased, but I think so too.
Yeah, I mean, you have a right to be biased. I mean, I said the same thing with the Red Sox, but when it's true, it's true. It doesn't matter if you're a fan of the team not. So
I could see all three of those guys that you named, Rodriguez, Tait, and Dingus, ending up sort of back half top 100 guys when all is said and done at the end of the year.
100%. Totally agree there. All right, let's close it out with one more here. Obviously, this, again, a really fun system. A lot of other great names we haven't even talked about. But what's the one name we haven't talked about yet in this Milwaukee system, Beck, that you think is a great buy right now, who I think you think could really pop off the rest of this year or just moving forward in general?
Yeah, you know what? I'll do you two better. I have three names here. One is Tyson Harden, who was a 12th rounder last year and is pitching extremely well so far this year. Right-hander, good fastball, good slider, getting good results. He is, you know, I would probably treat him similar to Jaron Watts Brown in terms of sleeper arms. So do a little bit of digging in there, sort of, you know, on your own time. The second one is Coleman Crow, which was, I believe that was the first trade that the David Stearns and Matt Arnold sort of respective front offices made after Stearns' departure. He is back from Tommy John. He just got promoted to AAA earlier this week. And the curveball is magnificent. He's getting really excellent results. There's probably too much pitching in Milwaukee right now for him to have any sort of significant role, but he is pitching really well, and I'm buying it. And then the last one is Josh Adamshefsky. The only reason that I'm somewhat confident in the pronunciation there is that seems like a very German sort of Wisconsin name. It is spelled Adamczewski. He has done some pretty crazy stuff after being a 15th rounder as a prep. He's more hit over power right now, but if he grows into more underlying or game power, I think he's going to fly up rankings. It's one of the better hit tools I've seen from, you know, a player this age. And I'm really excited about all three of these guys, Tyson Harden, Josh Adamshefsky, and Coleman Crow.
Yeah, Adamshefsky's contact rates, I don't have them in front of me, but I remember them being pretty damn good last time I was looking. And I think there's some sneaky pop there, too. He hasn't really shown it this year. What's he got? Yeah, just two home runs so far. And it's only been 24 games, though. But, yeah, definitely, you know, one of the more high-floor kind of hitters for that age, if you can even say something like that. But, yeah, I feel pretty good about that guy as well. That's one that I have kind of pushed up my rankings, too. And I'll just add one name real quick here before we get out of here. A guy that I was too low on in my FOPD rankings last year. But I like Bryce Message, you know, a 19-year-old righty, 6'4", you know, pretty good frame already. I think he can add a little bit of muscle to that. This year, he's kind of, you know, stats haven't been great. It's been okay. 3.92 ERA, 115 whip, 12% walk rate, 24% K rate. It's a load of Benetti's fastball, got two above average breakers. Really kind of depends on him developing that changeup a little bit, maybe, you know, improving the command and control, strike throwing a bit there, but a lot of projection, a lot of upside there with Bryce Message. So that's the name I've been kind of steadily pushing up my rankings as well. But that's going to wrap us up. Beck, thanks for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, and just a fun system to dig into here with Milwaukee. So again, tell everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and great shout on Bryce Message. You can find me on Twitter at @upper_Beck. All of my writing goes up on thedynastydugout.com. My podcast is the Prospect Promotion Incentive podcast. You can find it on Spotify and Apple Music. And I put up a weekly column over at the Dynasty Dugout called The Three Cap, covering the top hitter, pitcher, and a buy every single week out on Tuesdays around 1 Eastern.
Perfect. Definitely go follow Beck. Check out all the work he does, written and the podcast. Great stuff so far. I've got a few of the episodes so far. Great stuff on all fronts here from Beck. Obviously, check out my work over at Rotoballer and on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. And I'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.